Good morning. Before we continue, I'd like to just go back and revisit a point that we raised last week. We mentioned that the Gemara in Shabbos tells us that someone who gives a halvah, someone who lends money to an ani, is giving a halvah is a greater mitzvah than the mitzvah of tzedakah. It allows the ani to preserve his dignity, and therefore it's considered a bigger chesed. The Gemara in Shabbos adds that a matzil b'kis, if you invest money with him, you create a partnership with the ani, that is even a greater mitzvah than a halvah. Although, if the business does well, you're going to profit. It's an investment. Still, since, as Marshal explains, because you're going to give him as much money as he needs, you're a partner, you want him to succeed. Chavetz Chaim adds, because the other advantage is that if the business does not work out, then because it's a partnership, he won't have to pay you back. So because of that, it is a greater mitzvah, and it's a bigger, a higher madrega than the mitzvah of halva. The Aruch HaShulchan asks, this is in Yerodei and Siman Reish Mem Tes, he asks that the Rambam famously lists all of the madregas of tzedakah. When you give tzedakah, you know if you already know who knows who's giving it to you, you know who's getting it. There are different madregas of what the best way to give tzedakah is. The highest madrega that the Rambam mentions is when you give a halva, v'chazakta, when you give him a loan to prevent the ani from needing to take tzedakah. For the Aruch HaShulchan and the Beis Yosef also asked the question, L'chor, the Rambam should say, there's a higher madrega. Even better than giving a loan to the ani, the madrega, we should say, amatzel b'kis, investing with him, is even becoming a partner, is even a greater mitzvah. Why does the Rambam leave out this madrega of tzedakah, which is quoted as being the highest madrega? The Aruch HaShulchan says, very interesting shot. He says the Rambam left it out because it's not Negeah today. Zog the Aruch HaShulchan, this halacha that investing and being a matzah, giving an iska to an ani is the greatest form of tzedakah is only true when your kavana is to help the ani. And that, you're out to help the ani, that is the highest madrega of tzedakah. However, if you're an investment banker, you're out for yourself, and it happens to be on the side the ani will benefit. There, the Aruch HaShulchan says that's a business deal, and the Aruch HaShulchan is mechadish that does not have a din of tzedakah at all. And the Chavetz Chaim adds, the Chavetz Chaim in Avas Chesed, he quotes a Zohar. He starts off by saying that if you're investing with the ani, if you're taking a share of the profits, your intent, your kavana has to be primarily to help the ani. And he quotes a Zohar that if a person sees an ani and refuses to help him, to lend him money, unless he benefits from it as well, unless he gets a share of the profits, he says, the modo revi sheba gehenim is set aside for such people. Now, I don't know what the modo revi of gehenim is, but it certainly does not sound like a pleasant place to end up. And the point is, like this Aruch HaShulchan, that it's one thing if you're out to help the ani and you do it in a way where you preserve his dignity, where you give him all the capital that he needs, that is the highest madrega of tzedakah. But you have to be very careful, because if you're going down that route, and your ikar kavana, your primary focus is, the person is desperate, you take advantage of his desperation to force him to give you a chunk of his business, and to take a chunk of his profits, not only is that not the highest madrega of tzedakah, but according to the Zayar and according to the Aruch HaShulchan, it's not considered tzedakah at all. Now, today's shiur, we're going to focus on really one of the most basic questions in Gvias Chayiv, and that is, we learned two basic yesodos. The first halacha is that if a person owes money, priyas bal chayiv mitzvah, a person has a chiyuv, an obligation to pay up his chayiv. We learned how chomer it is. We learned that bezdin is koifa makin oisai aicha teitzei nafshoi. A person has to pay his debts. Mitzad sheni, we learned that there's an isur of loisia loy kenosha. If someone owes you money and you see he's not able to pay you back, so to act like a creditor, to pressure him, to embarrass him in order to force him to pay up, that is a lav doiraisa of loisia loy kenosha. The question is, when does this apply? As we learned, if the person has money and isn't paying, there's no isser of loisia loy kenosha. Adrab, if he has money and he's not paying, Bezdin is makin oisai asher teitzei nafshei. Bezdin will hit him and force him to pay. So the isur of loisia like kinoyisha is only the person has money, he's refusing to pay. But if he doesn't have money, when he doesn't have money, and you're pressuring him anyway. On the other hand, if he has money and he's not paying, there's no isur. Adraba, there it's makin oisai asher teitzei nafshei. The big question is, how do we define, what does it mean that a person doesn't have money to pay? Whenever a person borrows money, so usually he admits he owes the money, usually he'd like to pay. But it's a question of priorities. He has tuitions to pay, he has a mortgage, he has responsibilities to his family, and he puts paying, you know, very often the Bachleiv will put paying back his creditors somewhere on bottom of the list, either just before or just after his trips to Florida. Mitzai Cheney, the creditor is very recognized that they very often don't want the debtor to starve to death. They understand his basic necessities, his basic needs he's going to hold back for. But right after, you know, food, rent, they want to get paid. So what is the halacha? How much money, or what is a debtor allowed to keep for himself, and what does he have to give over to his creditor to satisfy his debts? Now, to understand this, we have to go through briefly a sugya. Really comes from sugya in Erechin. That if a person says Erki Alai, a person donates to Hegdish his value. So the Torah sets how much, depending on his age, male, female. Person has a certain value that he has to give to Hegdish. Now, the Mishnah on Erechin Daf Chav Dalet says that what happens if a person says Erki Alai, he owes Hegdish a certain amount of money. He doesn't have enough money to pay. So, Al Pi Din, it's very clear. If he said money goes to Hegdish, everything that he has goes to Hegdish. We take everything away. However, Zak the Gemara, there's a drasha. Imachu me'erkecha. So the Gemara darshins, Imachu hecheyehu me'erkecha. The Gemara darshins that even though you donated your money to Hegdish, we have to be machaya the person. We have to leave him enough money, enough assets that he needs to survive. And that amount, that's an exclusion, that is protected. Everything else will go to Hegdish. So how do we define how do we define what assets is he allowed to keep? So the Mishnah gives a list, and it is fairly stingy. We allow the person 30 days worth of food. We give him clothing for 12 months. We give him basic utensils. He gets a bed, linen, a cover, a pillow, the basic utensils personal utensils that he needs. Interestingly enough, he gets two beds. Now, why do you need two beds? So it seems back then they used to eat on a bed and they used to sleep on a bed. So really, you can just eat and sleep on the same bed. But, the Gemara explains, it's very unhealthy just to sit there eat and then just fall asleep right then and there. You have to walk, you have to exercise a little bit. You have to walk at least Dalet Amos. So therefore, you have to have two beds, one to eat on, and then your other one, your sleeping one, is Dalet Amos. It's about 8 feet away. And that way you get some exercise between eating and sleeping, and that's why we give him two beds. But other than that, other than his basic utensils, everything else has to be sold for Erchin. And the Erchin Shulchan says, today where we do not eat on a bed, so today we get a table and a chair besides for your bed, but you get to keep only the very, very basic necessities. Tefillin, you do get to keep, because it's considered a malbush, it's clothing, and it's a chi of haguf. There's a machlokes where you get to keep a talus. Talus is not a chi of haguf. Talus and befrat, the befrat, where a person wears a talus cotton, you're making the mitzvah of tzitzis regardless. So the Pesachei Tshuva brings down from the Rishmei She'ela, we don't leave the person a talus, we take it away. Aruch HaShulchan argues, he says you do keep a talus. Now as far as the clothing, you're allowed to keep clothing for a year. The Poskim all speak out, this is only weekday clothing. Why isn't it? Because you don't walk around with it in the street. It's not used as a mob. What? You do. It's true. Tefillin also is like that. But there are two reasons said by tefillin. It's a malbush, and also it's a chovas haguf. a talus is not a chayvus aguf. And befrat where you makai the mitzvah with a talus cotton, so you don't need it. Now, we do not either leave a person with Shabbos begadim. He only is entitled to a year's worth of weekday clothing. Shabbos begadim is considered a luxury, and that's something that he is not entitled to keep. Now, the Gemara in Erechim then adds a very tremendous chumrah. This halacha, that we leave the person 30 days worth of food and 12 months worth of clothing, applies only to him. If he's married, he has a mishpacha, he has a wife, he has children who he's responsible to feed, to clothe, to take care of, still the drasha, this exclusion, is 30 days worth of food that he personally needs. He is not allowed to keep back money or food that he needs for his wife or for his children. They'll have to be mafzer al psachim. He'll have to collect tzedakah for them. But this limited exclusion of 30 days of food and a year's worth of clothing is for him only, not for his family.
But it still comes for the loan. But
it
is also comfort.
Oh, very good. Very good. Because there's a difference between when you borrow money, when you owe someone money, the creditor has rights to everything that you have. Mezoinus ishtoi is, there are two points. First of all, it's drabanan. That's what Sefer Truma's point, it's drabanan. The chi of drabanan to support your wife and children cannot override the chi of midoy raisa that you have to pay up your bali chayvus. And secondly, it seems that when you have a bali chayv, you owe him money, so he has a claim against every asset that you have. They belong, they're meshubit to him. In a sense, he has rights to these assets. The chi of to give clothing to your family is whatever you have to share with them. But it's not the same type of choiv, and therefore a bal choiv, a creditor, comes before giving the wife and children food or clothing. Good, it's true. That's true. So there is machlo. But the point over there is that it's not a chi of mammon in that sense. It's a chi of ishus. Whatever you have, when you come home with your one Danish, you can't eat it. You have to share that with your wife, or perhaps you have to give the whole thing to your wife. But if it's not a regular choiv mamon that you have a debt to somebody. Now, although the halacha is that if a person has 2 years worth of clothing, he has a lot of suits, a lot of pairs of shoes. The halacha is we leave him; he's only entitled to 12 months worth of clothing. We sell everything else, and we give whatever the proceeds of the garage sale we pay. We give that to the creditor. However, clothing that belongs to his wife and children, here already it's not so simple. Because here, it's machlokes rishayim exactly when, but here there's an argument that when a person bought clothing for his wife, it's not the pshat that it's his clothing that he happens to let his wife wear. The pshat over there is that when you buy clothing for your wife, you're giving it to them. Once you've given it to them, it belongs to them, it's theirs. Once it's theirs, it is protected from the Baal Chayv. The Baal Chayv can't collect it because it doesn't belong to the debtor anymore. It's a machlokes exactly when you say it. It's in halacha, it's mashma jewelry. There is a stronger claim against jewelry. There's more of an argument to say that the creditor could seize your wife's jewelry. Halacha l'maisa, Yoruch HaShulchan writes that today this machlokes is not negay. He says today when people buy things for their wife, it's a true present. If a person gives his wife a jewelry, a present, he can't go ahead the next day and change his mind and decide to auction it off because he wants to buy himself a nicer car. So once it's given to her, it's hers, and therefore it's protected from a creditor. But anything in the future, if a person wants to leave himself money in order to provide for his wife and children in the future, that the Baal Choyev certainly comes before. Now, there's a machlokes in Erechin over there. What happens if there's also an exclusion for kli omnis? If a person is a craftsman, he is allowed to keep whatever tools he needs to perform his malacha, to perform his job. The halacha is not only allowed to keep one of them, he's allowed to keep a second one as well. You need a spare in case the first one breaks. And therefore, you can keep two of each tool that you need to perform your job, whatever your livelihood is. However, it's a machlokes over there in Erechin, but we paskin, that's only true by tools. A person has a hammer, he has a tool that he needs to do his job. However, a chamor, someone, a donkey driver who earns his living driving people around, a taxi or a delivery service, the halacha is he has to sell his donkey. His donkey, his chamor, is not considered a tool, it's considered nechasim, it's considered an asset, And even though that's what he's using for his parnasa, still he would have a chiv to sell it in order to pay up his debt. The modern day equivalent would probably be a car. Although you may need your car to get to work, or even if you're a taxi driver, your whole parnasa is dependent on the car. Since a car is not a tool, it's considered an asset, the creditor would have the right to seize it. It would not be protected. So it's a good question. The Paiskim do not define. They say one's a neches, one's a kli omnis. What I presume is the difference is that if you have a hammer, that's a tool that's specifically used for an omnis. That's protected. A car is something which is for general use. Most people have cars. It's for pleasure. They drive wherever they need to go. This person happens to be using the car to earn a living. But since it is not a kli which is meyuchad la'avoida, it's considered a regular asset, a regular nechasim, and all assets, all nechasim, are meshuvid, are pledged for the chayiv and have to be sold to pay to satisfy the debt. What? So I looked high and low. I couldn't find anywhere where it says that an iPhone is protected. You can't live it. It's already oxygen. It's true. So it's true. Just like a chamor, a taxi driver needs his car, but still it's considered a neches. I would suggest that a phone, although you may need it, it's not something which is used exclusively for business. You may need it for your business, but many people have it and they're busy playing Angry Birds or whatever they're doing with it all day. It's not necessarily a kli omnis. Excuse me? If you want to sell it to him and he wants to rent it back to you or he wants to allow you to use it, beautiful. But Al Pidin, he has the right to demand that you either give it to him as payment for the debt or have Besdin sell it to a third party and he can collect the proceeds. Now, interestingly, the Shach adds that, and it's true, there's a halacha that if a person has any properties, person bought some real estate during the good old days, now he can't pay his debts. The halacha is we force him to sell all of his holdings in order to pay off the debt. Now, he might claim that I don't want to sell it. It's a down market. Let me wait a few years. It's very nice. He might be right. The market may come back. It may not. But the bottom line is if the debt is due today, the creditor has the right to say, I'm not interested in playing the market. And the creditor has the right to force him to sell off any real estate, any holdings that he has in order to satisfy the debt. Now the Shach adds, from Manasseh HaSon, and it's Meduik in the Rajba as well, that we also can force him to sell his house. A house is not a protected asset. It's a neches. It's something which has many people have much of their net worth is tied up in their house. And a creditor has the right to demand that the Baal Choyv sell his house in order to pay up the debt. Now the Maharit says, he doesn't say what the Makar is, but the Maharit says that just like you leave a person 12 months worth of clothing, so we have to leave him 12 months of rent as well. So you sell the house and you leave him the amount that he'll need to rent a house for 12 months. However, from the Stimas HaPoiskim, the Shach, the Rajba, the Teres Emes, it is not clear at all that we actually pass them like this. They seem to hold you just sell off the asset without leaving him anything. Well, it's somewhere in between. There is a process which is discussed later on in Shulchan Aruch about how you sell it. We don't just go ahead and sell it to the first buyer. However, the process is to make sure that he gets a fair market value for today. There's no concept of saying, you know, the market is down today, let's wait 3 years, we think the market will be doing better then. So you get today's fair market value, but you don't have the right to say, I want to wait and I believe the market will go up. That's a good question. He'll have to find the place. Misadrin is pretty draconian.
Even according to Marit, I would assume he can only get rent for himself or a small apartment.
Correct. It would probably be a one bedroom apartment, enough room for one person. Correct. You would not be able to rent a 6-bedroom mansion because that's already providing for your wife and for your children. Now, even these. The Gemara just seems to hold it as a svaro. That's what you need, kidei chiyusai. The Gemara does not explain why one you get longer than the other. Excuse me? Shulchan Aruch has not changed. Okay, we'll get to some of the practical, you know, the halacha l'maisa later on, but the halacha has not changed. Now there is an interesting, the Michas Yitzchok has an interesting shaila. There was a butcher who owed someone money, and the question was, can the creditor seize his refrigerator? So interestingly enough, the Michas Yitzchok says, your refrigerator is not a kliyonis. You don't need a refrigerator, you could sell the meat fresh, perhaps it would be better for everyone. And he says, although it's convenient that that's what many people do, he says you could, in theory, survive. And therefore, in theory, he says, there would be, the creditor would have the right to claim it. He doesn't recommend that you do that, but at least the Iker Hadin, he says that it would not be a kliyomnis. I don't know if that would apply today, because today you probably can't run a butcher shop without a refrigerator. But I'll call upon him back then, when at the time that he wrote the tshuva, it just, you know, brings out. Excuse me? I would imagine that I was talking about one of these, you know, commercial refrigerators, which is only useful for a butcher. It didn't mean just like your regular home refrigerator that he stuck his meat into. So something which is specifically made to run a business and would perhaps be a kliyumnus. But he ends up saying it's not a kliyumnus. He says it's more doima to a car, it's doima to a nechus, and he says you can force him to sell it. Now, going back to our original question, we started off 2 weeks ago, there's an isur of loisiyah lekenosh. Someone owes you money, he's not paying. The halacha is, if he can't afford to pay, and you chase him, you pressure him, you're over a lav d'oraisa. Now our question was, what does it mean he can't afford to pay you? It comes out in halacha, not being able to afford means he doesn't have anything more than this minimum misaja. In other words, he has nothing, all he has is 30 days worth of food, 12 months worth of clothing, again, for himself. He has a bed, a chair, a table, basic, you know, one pillow, one blanket. If that's all he has, then pressuring him to pay is both a lav d'oraisa and a waste of time. However, if he has more than that, if he happens to have two beds at home, or if he has a house, he has a car, he has nechasim that al pi halacha are not protected, the isur d'oraisa of loisiyah lekenosha will not apply. Because you have the right to pressure him, because al pi din, he is a baal choiv. Al pi din, he has an obligation to sell these nechasim and to pay you back. So it'll depend. If you go after him, if you know that if he would hold a garage sale and sell all of his things, he still wouldn't be able to pay back the debt in full. So if you go to him and say, I want every penny that you owe me, that's loisiyah lekenosha. Because he's not able to pay every penny that you owe him. You know that. You're pressuring him. That's a lav. But if all you're asking him for is a partial payment, pay me what you can, and he has nechasim that al pi halacha, he is mechuyev to sell in order to satisfy the debt, that's not a lav of loisiyah lekenosha. Because adraba, and this is a case where it's koyven oisai, makin oisai ashatetei nafshai, he has a chiyev to go ahead and sell it, and asking him to fulfill this chiyev would not be yasser. So in most cases, it'll come out, in most cases, as long as you're just asking for a partial payment, you're asking to pay what he can, it's virtually unheard of for a person not to have anything, not to have any nechasim that he's mechuyev to sell. And therefore, in most cases, the lav d'oraisa will not apply.
Why is the seal recognition not a problem in this case? But somebody will basically love it, though it seems to be a problem one way or the other. In other words, if Haggadah, he has nechasim in his house, just like there's no lav d'oraisa, like in Nisha, why can't you go into his house to get it?
Okay, that's actually a machlokes. If he has the nechasim and he refuses to pay, that might be different. Because there, where you have to do it for a piron, it's all machlekes. But there are shittas that say that if he's a gavra amma, there's no other way to get it. It could be that it's mutter.
Even under his wife's name?
Under his wife's name is a separate issue. If they truly belong to his wife, he owes the money, not his wife, and therefore they wouldn't be touchable. On the other hand, there's a tshuva sarosh, and there's extensive discussion among the poskim. If a person owes money and he transfers assets to his wife, to his children, to other people to avoid the debt, Dezen has the right to ignore or undo the transfer, assume that it was just a harama, and to collect it. But that's a real dentira. You have to figure out, was this a bona fide transfer, or is this just a harama, a way to avoid the creditor?
You're saying that maybe what you can is that the assumption being then the rest of it will be forgiven, or
No, not forgiven. It means right now, pay me what you can. The rest of it will deal when you get more money. But it's a question of right now, I can only push you to pay what you're able to. You'll have a problem. It's not going to be simple. On this it says, you know, Vidalo said Averivo. If he owes the money, you have the right to demand it. Now, to the extent that you're not going to ask him to sell his house, then badgering him, you're just wasting his time, and you're just making him feel bad. So you have to recha kamecha. But loisila kenoisha, if al pidin he's mchuyev to sell these things, and he's refusing to do these, and he's not doing so, so he is the person who's doing a shalekidin over here, not the creditor who lent the money and simply wants his money back. Now let's go. This is the theory. This is the halacha. Is what al pidin is mechuyev and what he's not mechuyev to do. What's the ma'isa? How does Bezdin go about when a person owes money and he's not paying? So the Rambam that we had in the Maamar Kamis this morning speaks out that midoraisa, if a person owes money, Bezdin tells him, bring everything to Bezdin. Get a U-Haul truck, take everything in your house, empty it out, bring it to Bezdin. You can't even leave a needle, bring everything to Bezdin. Bezdin takes the whole stack of his belongings, goes through it. They give him back kedei seder. They give him back food for 30 days, clothing for a year, kliyumnis, the basic utensils. Everything else, Bezdin sells off or sells it to the creditor, and that is how he pays off the debt. Zok the Rambam, midoy raisa. Once the person does that, he brings his asset, he says, this is all that I have. Bezdin cannot do anything else. He said that's it. Bachutz Tamid, Bezdin does not have the right to go into his house and to start snooping around. Is he telling the truth? Is he not telling the truth? The halacha is we take his statement at face value. Nevertheless, Zok Tosfos, when the Goyim saw that Mishrabu HaRamoim, people were borrowing money, they were withholding assets, they were not paying back the creditors. So the Goyim made a takana that after the person comes to Bezdin, brings everything to Bezdin, we make him make a shvua that he has nothing else. We include in the shvua that he has not given any of the assets as a matana amanas lahachzer. He hasn't hidden the assets anywhere else or given them, made any sort of harama, giving it over to someone temporarily. We also make him make a shvua that if he ever earns money, if he ever comes to any money, he will only keep for himself kedei seder, this minimum amount. He will not give anything to his wife, he will not give anything to his children. Everything else will go back to pay the creditor. Now, the Rambam says that if you don't do that, if the shvua that you make, you don't make a shvua about the future, that you don't make a shvua that all money that you get will pay for go to the creditor. The halacha is the creditor has the right to bring you to Bezdin every 30 days and go through the process again and make another shvua that you didn't come to any money over the past month, and anything that you have will go over to a Baal Chayiv. Now the Pamayne Zov says this is not a good idea. He says that when people make a shvua that any money they get will go to a creditor, he said the experience shows they don't listen to the shvua. Experience shows that when they get money, they give it to their wife, to their children, they keep more than they're supposed to. So he says that they were mavato, or the batei din stopped doing that. Instead, we call the person back every 3 months or so and ask him and make him make a shvua l'sha'avar about the past, but we don't make a shvua about the future. Correct. The Paimonizov says that's why we don't make a shvua about the future, because he's going to be over it. He says we don't call him back more frequently than every 3 months because we don't want to make extra shvuas. But every 3 months, he says, is a reasonable amount of time. The malva has the right to know whether the creditor or the Baal Chayiv got any money, and that's a reasonable amount of time to make him make a shvua. No, but however, Zok the Rambam, this takana that you make a shvua is because Mishrabu HaRamon. You know, it's midoy raisa, he's innocent until proven guilty. We assume, if he says these are my assets, we assume that he's telling the truth. Midrabanan, we have a takana, that because there were people who there were Ramoim, so Midrabanan, we made this shvua. However, Zok the Rambam, in a case where Bezdin sees that this debtor is being honest. He's b'cheskas, everyone knows he doesn't have any money. Everybody knows he's an honest person. And still the creditor is bringing him to Beis Din and trying to force him to make a shvua. He's doing it to embarrass him, to put pressure on him. Zog the Rambam, in that case, the Beis Din cannot insist on the shvua. And if the Beis Din does so, the Beis Din is being over l'sila kenosha. Now this happens very often. Whenever there's a question of gviyas chayv, parties come to Beis Din. So the Beis Din begins by interrogating the Baal Chayv, trying to figure out, does he really have money? Is he hiding things? Is he playing games or not? And that's their job. But the moment Beis Din determines that he's being truthful, and he really doesn't have any assets, if they continue mooching him and in cross-examining him and embarrassing him, that is a lav l'sila kenosha. The Rambam is very clear, the Beis Din, the Dayan itself, who is doing it, will be over. So it is a very delicate balance. On one hand, we see from the takana that we go ahead, we make the person make a shvua, we do what we can to try to find the assets, we don't just take the debtor's word for it. On the other hand, once you realize the money is not there, and now you're just pushing and pushing and pushing, there the Beis Din itself has the issur of l'sila kenosha. It's the Rambam's chiddush. I don't see it. It's not mufurish in the pasuk, but this is the Rambam says very clearly that the dying that does it is over the lav. Let's get to the bottom line that everyone's been waiting. Nebuch, we pushed them off for the past 3 weeks. What's halacha l'maaseh? So what happens? People come to Beis Din, and one of them says ainli. And unfortunately today, that's usually what happens in most Dinei Torah. You have the Din Torah, one person wins, and after you paskin that, Pliny owes a certain amount of money, then there's another Din Torah, he says, Ainli, I can't afford to pay it. What does Beis Din do? Now, although in Halacha, what they're supposed to do is, they're supposed to tell the debtor to go ahead, hire a U-Haul truck, bring all their personal belongings to Beis Din, their furniture, the beds, everything. I've never seen Beis Din do this. I've never seen Beis Din have a garage sale. What they usually do is a modern-day equivalent of going through his belongings, and that is we demand a year, 3 years' worth of financials. We'll ask for their tax returns, which, depending on the person, may or may not be meaningful. We typically ask for bank statements, all the canceled checks, credit card statements for the past, again, depending on the case, a year or 3 years. And we actually have a whole questionnaire, a misogyny questionnaire, where we ask the person to list any assets, any properties that he owns, what kind of car he drives, what they've done in the summer, both himself and his children. They went to camp, they went on vacation. And we have a long questionnaire really asking them to detail what their what their lifestyle has been like, what their spending habits have been like. Now, this questionnaire accomplishes a number of things. The first is, if a person has any money left, most people would rather pay out the money, or at least negotiate a reasonable payment plan, than to have to fill out this questionnaire and give it to the other party. People don't want to go there. So that's the first thing. Very often, people will just, once they see, it's not just ainli you walk home, you have to prove the ainli, you have to really open up your books and your lifestyle for examination. Very often, people are willing to negotiate and work out some sort of reasonable payment plan that works for both parties. If that doesn't happen, so it gives the Beis Din and the other party the opportunity to go through their books and see, is his lifestyle really consistent with the Tainus Ainli? We recently had a case where a person said Ainli. He initially, in writing in the questionnaire, he said that he had been earning $90,000 a year for the past 5 years. When he came to Beis Din, the documentation that he gave, actually he lowered it. He said he was making $78,000 a year for the past who knows how many years. What was interesting is that 6 months before this Din Torah, he had bought himself a house. The closing price was $675,000. He had put another between $50,000 and $200,000 to improve the house. Now, if you're making $78,000 a year and you're buying a $675,000 house, you have a lot of explaining to do. Something doesn't make sense. So in this case, actually, the Beis Din tried subpoenaing the mortgage application. Because one thing's for sure, he didn't get a $525,000 mortgage if he told the bank he has no assets and his income is $78,000 a year. So by going through the questionnaire, by giving your financials, and by giving the Bezdin the opportunity to go through it, the Bezdin has a, you know, nothing is foolproof. You know, some people go to great lengths to hide their assets, but you get a pretty good idea of where people are holding, what their lifestyle is like, and a pretty good idea of whether they could or cannot afford to start making payments. Bezdin will do that, yes. But let me just get to the last point. The last reason and the last advantage of a questionnaire like this is when there's a din Torah, when a creditor comes to foreclose, usually what happens is that the creditor knows he owes his owed money. He sees the debtor walking around driving his Acura, and every time he sees him living with an affluent lifestyle, it eats him up. Because there he's saying, Ainley, I can't afford to pay you. And yet, life goes on. He seems to be enjoying a very nice lifestyle. Now, this happens all the time. It comes to a din Torah. They tell you that they leased the Acura 3 years ago when times were good. He can't give it up. He's stuck in the middle of the lease. It's probably true in most cases. But my first piece of advice to anyone who's a bachoyev, who's struggling to pay, who can't pay his debts, the first thing I tell him is get rid of the car. I don't care whether financially it makes sense, it doesn't make sense. You drive around in a nice car, and you're telling people aimlessly, no one's going to believe you, and they're just going to be fataina. Either they bring you to Bezdin, they won't bring you to Bezdin, but usually that's what causes it. The creditor does not believe the Baal Choyv is truly struggling. The creditor thinks that he's just put paying this debt on the bottom of his priorities. However, if he comes to Bezdin, and the person discloses he's 4 months behind on his mortgage, he's late on his car payments, his shvager's the one that's paying his utility bills, and he makes it clear what kind of desperate financial situation he's in, in general, the creditor backs off. We had actually, before Bezdin Yesharim was open, Rabbi Kahan, who's the Av Bezdin, went to Reb Nissen Karelitz, and one of his big kashas or problems, I'm going to open a Bezdin, he says, the halacha is, Misadron lebal choyv. Someone comes in, he can't pay his debts, he has to sell his furniture, he has to take away everything from his wife, his kids. What do I do with myself? What should I do? So Reb Nissen Karelitz told him, don't worry. He said, you'll see. We'll come to Bezdin. If the Baal Choyv is honest, he comes and he puts out exactly where things stand. He shows the Bezdin, he shows everyone he has nothing left, he's desperate, he literally has no food to eat. He said, you'll see, the creditors will never ask you to go sell his furniture. He said, it's not going to happen. And Baruch Hashem, so far the Haftacha is holding true. In a case where the debtor is really trying his best and he's really desperate, the Baal Choyv is, do not ask Bezdin to go all the way. They're understanding. They ask for a payment plan. They ask him to pay what he could. It's never been done. It's never been pushed all the way. On the other hand, if the Baal Choyv comes and he's playing games, and you see that he's withholding assets, and you see that he's not being forthcoming, then the Minchas Yitzchak writes, Yikov Edina Sahar, then you should go all the way. You should force him to sell his house. Whatever you can get your hands on, you should force him to sell, because he's not being erlich. He's not doing what he's choyv to do, al pidin. He has the right to see it, because anything that the debtor has, he really has to turn over to the creditor. So if it's a list of assets, he certainly has the right to see it. If you're talking about charges or payments that he made in the past, that's something which a Bezdin will lav dafka share. We'll generally review this in camera. Initially, we'll go through it, and then if there's anything that the creditor needs to see, we'll show it to him. But just to go, for him to figure out where he buys his groceries is something which is not really any of his business.
Does this apply to any accounts
received for only a halva? It's a machlokes. Some sheets hold misajin lebal choyv is only by a halva. By other choyvs, it could be you take everything. There's no din seder. In other words, this is the most kuladika way, where you leave him 30 days worth of food. Everything else, by a gazlin, v'nimkar big nevosoy. Someone steal, he sell him as a slave. Now we don't have slaves today. Bezdin can't do it. But the concept of misadrin is only by a Also, you don't find misadrin there. There you can take away everything in order to pay up the choyvus.
What's the explanation that you sold your harsh as his wife and his kids?
That what?
How do we explain the halacha that the halacha is so harsh as his wife and his kids?
It's not a question of harsh on wife and kid. The point is, if you're a Baal Choyv, you owe the money is not yours. So you're taking money that belongs to your creditor and feeding your children with it. So why take it from the creditor? Take it from someone else's tzedakah. The point is, it's not yours. If you took money from someone, you owe that back to him. He has a claim against your assets. You can't take this thing that your creditor is entitled to and do tzedakah with it on his cheshbon. It's something which the b'machzor ha'psachim, the whole community, has an obligation to support them. Okay, good. That's 1126. I'm not going to be able to address that. Well, when we go, it is a good point. There's actually an Igros Moshe about bankruptcy protection, but it's a whole. We're going to have to get back to it in another shir. Okay, excellent. So 2 points. As far as when there is an undisputed debt, there is a marsham that says you can go straight to court. You don't have to go through Bezdin. However, the marsham himself doesn't really have a makar for it. So it's not everyone agrees to it. But one of the objections that the later place can say is that that's only true when the person owes you the money, he has the assets he's not paying. So there's nothing to go to Bezdin for. Just take away his assets, take away his car, take away his house. There would be mutter. However, the poskim speak out. If he has no money, and he would have to do a massage on the Baal Choyv, there he says you have to go to Bezdin. Because the secular courts will not apply massage in the way halacha will, and therefore there'll be a reason why you'd have to go to Bezdin. Now, in a practical sense, I'm not an attorney, I haven't gone through all the laws, but my understanding is that in virtually every single category that we've discussed, civil law is more lenient on the debtor. Now, if that's true, then this objection will no longer hold true, because you're guaranteeing, if anything, you're hurting, the creditor is hurting himself by going to court, he's not hurting the debtor, so then this would not be a reason not to go straight to court. So according to the Marsham, if he has assets that would not be protected in Misadrin, you'd have the right to go. Correct. He's referring to a Shitas Marsham that says, by a Choyv Borer, if it's an undisputed debt, there's no litigation, it's just a question of collection. He says, Bezdin does not have sheriffs, cannot enforce a collection. So in a case where the person admits that he owes the money, he's just refusing to pay, Marsham says these halachas will not apply.
Why would he have to go to Bezdin to foresee if he's going to forego the money? In other words,
that's the Marsham's chiddush, but when it's a choyv bor and he says I'm not paying, the Marsham says you don't have to. Again, others argue, the Marsham says that he midas chasidus to try to go to Bezdin, but there is a shita lahakol, and there are those that are samech on it. Just like to end briefly with a var from the Aruch Chaim. The mitzvah of lending money to Yisrael, the makor is im kesef talva es ami. Now, im kesef talva es ami sounds like im kesef talva means if you want to lend money to a yid. Im usually means rishos. So the Mechilta points out, even though the word im usually means rishos, it's optional. This is an exception. And here where it says, im kesef talva es ami, there's a chiyuv, there's an obligation. If you were able to afford it, you're able to lend someone money, there's a chiyuv to do so. In fact, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, why does the Torah use such a funny language of im kesef talva? If it means there's a chiyuv, so it should say. There's mitzvah, it should say it as a mitzvah, a chiyuv to lend someone else money. Aruch Chaim answers this with another question. And he asked the question, which I would venture to say no one in this room was really bothered by this question before. Aruch Chaim's question is that why do people have more money than they need? What's the point? Yaakov asked Rebbega, little boy, what people have tremendous ashiras? What's the pshat? What is Rebbe Yishlam sending this extra money for? Zogdi Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, that for whatever the HaKadosh Baruch Hu Pesachet Mespeh Lecho Chayrotza, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of, gives parnasa to every person that needs it. However, there are some people, because either Averis or whatever the Rebbe Yishlam's cheshbon is, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want to have anything to do with directly. Does not want to give him parnasa directly. And therefore, Zogdi Aruch Chaim, for such people, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is, he gives that parnasa, he sends that money to somebody else. And that person who has the money that really should go to this ani, he will go ahead and give tzedakah or bimalva to this ani. And that way we'll accomplish two things. Number one, the ani will end up with a parnasa, he'll end up with what he needs. And number two, this usher, the person who had the money, is zoich in the mitzvah of tzedakah, the mitzvah of kesef talva. Zog the Aruch Chaim, the way to read the pasuk is like this. In kesef, person sees that he has money, and he's wondering, what do I have this money for? What's it doing in my bank account? So the Zog the Aruch Chaim, talva es ami. The reason why you have it is that in order to be talva es ami, in order for you to go ahead to give tzedakah or to lend it to an ani that needs it. But therefore, when you're lending it to him, you have to realize, es ha'ani imach. Es ha'ani, what should be the ani's imach is by you. What you're doing is you're lending the ani, the money, his money. It was his money that was sent to you to be malved to him. And Zog the Aruch Chaim, the person recognizes that, if a person realizes that when the ani comes to him for a loan and he lends him the money, it's really as the ani imach. It's really he has the money in the first place in order to do the chesed, in order to do the tzedakah. Then loisia loy kenosha. Then it's self-evident. He has no right to be a noisha. He has no right to pressure the Baal Chayiv. He has no right to embarrass him. He has no right to push him. Because in reality, what you gave the ani was his money. It was given to you for you to have the schus, for you to get the schar, for you to get the mitzvah of giving it to him. But once you've lent it to him, if now he's not able to pay, you have to realize l'sliyo kinoisha as so on imach. You have to realize with that hashkafa that you haven't lost anything. You've just adaraba because Baruch Hu was mezaka you with a mitzvah. And I think this goes a long way in explaining. We explained that on one hand we find that the dinim of priyos of gvias chayiv are very drastic. If a Baal Chayiv has any assets, we can't leave things for his wife, we can't leave things for his children, we don't leave him with a house, everything that he has goes back to the creditor. And the reason for that is, he borrowed money, he owes it back, he has to pay it. There are no loopholes in halacha, whatever you have an obligation, you have a Chayiv. Leaving this world, being a Baal Chayiv, is something which is treated very severely in halacha. However, if the Ani reaches the point where he's given up everything that he has, he's done everything in his power to pay up the Baal Chayiv, and it's just not enough. There's nothing left. Then we have to look at it in the other angle. Then we have to look at the Isser of Loisia Loikenosha. Then we have to realize if it was such a matziv where you lent the money and now the ani lost everything, has nothing left to pay you, then a person's hashkafa has to be as the ani imach. It was only my money originally in order so that I can lend it, that I can give it to an ani. And there, in such a case, he has to be very careful. He can't take advantage, and he cannot be Mitzayah or another Yid because of the money that's owed. Okay, next week in Mitzvah Hashem, we'll go back to Hilchos Ribbis.